Gopinashami Kundaradha Kundagiri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Buddhaya. Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale. Sri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve. Gauravani Pitarni Nivasesis Nivadi Paskatyadi Satarne. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamstra. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Bitham Sam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamsha Panchakalpa Chubhishtaki Pasanidhya Vitapati Janam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevi Namo Namah Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's June 8th, 2018, Radadesh, Belgium. We're reading from Canto 8, Chapter 20, Bali Maharaj Surrenders the Universe, Text 23. Rasama chas tangri taleta padayor. Mahim mahindaram purushasya jangayo. Patatrino januni vishvamurtir. Urvor ganam marutam indrasena. Rasam, the lower planetary system. Achasta, observed. Angri tale, beneath the feet or on the sole. Atta, thereafter. Padayoho, on the feet. Mahim, the surface of the land. Mahidran, the mountains. Purushasya, of the giant personality of Godhead. Jangayoho, on the calves. Patatrinaha, the flying living entities. Januni, on the knees. Vishramurtehe, on the form of the gigantic Lord. Urvaho, on the thighs. Ganam marutam, varieties of air. Indrasenaha, Bali Maharaja, who had obtained the soldiers of King Indra and who was situated in the post of Indra. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, Bali Maharaja, who was occupying the seat of King Indra, could see the lower planetary systems, such as Rasatala, on the soles of the feet of the Lord's universal form. He saw on the Lord's feet the surface of the globe, on the surface of his calves all the mountains, on his knees the various birds, and on his thighs the varieties of air. Purport. The universal situation is described herein in regard to the complete constitution of the Lord's gigantic universal form. The study of this universal form begins from the sole, that's S-O-L-E, the bottom of the foot. Above the soles are the feet. Above the feet are the calves. Those are the legs, calves, not the baby calves. Above the calves are the knees, and above the knees are the thighs. Thus the parts of the universal body, one after another, are described herein. The knees are the place of birds, and above that are varieties of air. The birds can fly over the mountains, and above the birds are varieties of air. Rasam achastangri tale ta padayor, mahim mahim daran purushasya jangayo, patatrino januni vishvamurtir, urvor ganam marutam indrasena. Thereafter, Bali Maharaj, who was occupying the seat of King Indra, could see the lower planetary systems, such as Rasatala, on the soles of the feet of the Lord's universal form. He saw on the Lord's feet the surface of the globe, on the surface of his calves all the mountains, on his knees the various birds, and on his thighs the varieties of air. So I'm going to look today at one compound word here in the verse. And that is Indrasenaha, the army of Indra. So it's interesting that this word, the army of Indra, is understood to mean Bali Maharaj. It's not said here he's the chief of the army of Indra, just the army of Indra. So it's understood that he is controlling Indra's army. Now, Prabhupada also translates it when he was sitting on Indra's throne. Like in America, the president is called the commander-in-chief, meaning he's the commander-in-chief of the military. So the person who controls the army, who's the head of the army, is understood to be sitting on the topmost throne. So I was thinking about the members of Indra's army. Here you're serving Indra, and this demon comes in, conquers your kingdom, and takes over. And is controlling you, and you're still Indra's army, but instead you're taking orders from Bali Maharaj. And then one day, Lord Vaman comes, and you see his universal form. As we were reading before, all the members there saw this universal form. And I was thinking that in many ways, we are also part of the army of the devotees. We talk about Srila Prabhupada as the Senapati, yeah? Indrasena, the pati means a husband or a leader. So the leader of the army. Raghunath Das Goswami also talks about that if we want to get rid of the deepest pride in our heart, we have to go to Krishna's army general. So if Prabhupada is an army general, then we must be the army. And Prabhupada talked about a lot in military terms. He would talk about distributing books like dropping bombs and declaring war on Maya. He definitely used a lot of military metaphors there. And what does it feel like to have, instead of course, Bali Maharaj was also a great devotee, or became a great devotee. But what would it be like to be under the control of the demons and then be rescued by the Lord? So Indra's army, if we're thinking about how they felt serving an enemy, right? We've already read that in the previous verse, that Vishnu was taking the side of Bali's enemies. Of course, this concept of a friend and enemy, Prahlad Maharaj rejects it, and Krishna tells us to be detached from this friend and enemy. And this situation with Bali and Indra is a little peculiar, because Bali and Indra have the same... They have the same goal and also the same family, particularly who is the same in their family?
Mother.
Not the mother.
Father.
And their mothers are?
Sisters.
So their mothers, in former ages, often when people engaged in polygamy, they married sisters. And when women engaged in polyandry, they married brothers. It was quite common. So the wives that had Indra and Bali were sisters. They were co-wives, and they shared the same husband. So these are really half-brothers, Bali and Indra. And as well, Bali's a little bit of a descendant, but they're related in the same family. So Bali's not immediately the father, but he didn't immediately have Kasyapa as his father, but his grandfather, great-grandfather, something like that. So they're in the same family. They're both related through Kasyapa, and yet they're apparently enemies. Right, Diti had the demons as her children, and then you have, Bali's the son, the grandson of Prahlad, who's the son of Hiranyakashipu, and Hiranyakashipu is the son of Diti, and then you have Indra is directly the son of Aditi. So Bali is a descendant, he's like a great-great nephew, I guess, of Indra. So they're in the same family, and yet they're enemies. Of course, we see even in... ordinary life, sometimes family members can become enemies, isn't it? And we had with Dhruva, who felt that Uttama, his half-brother, was his enemy. You know, nowadays it's not done through polygamy, but done through divorce and remarriage. so that your stepmother becomes your enemy, and your stepfather becomes your enemy. And I remember reading a whole article about this, the complicated marriages today. So, you know, there's like a 50% divorce rate for first marriages and a 60% divorce rate for second marriages. And so, you know, two people who've been married once, they get, each of them has children from their first marriage, and then they marry again, then they have children together, right? So they're bringing up their children together plus their children from the first marriage, but then they get divorced, right? So then you have an ex-stepbrother, right? And you have an ex-stepmother. And then it was writing about like the grandparents. The grandparents often become attached to the stepchildren. You understand? And sometimes the second marriage lasts for 10 or 15 years. So you grew up in the same bedroom with your stepbrothers and sisters, and you really got to know your grandparents. And then there's, you know, another divorce. And then there's a wedding. And who comes? You know, well, I don't know if I can invite my ex-step-grandmother to my wedding. And so there, it becomes, you know, and the your daughter says, don't you dare invite the, you know, your ex-step-grandmother to the wedding, and they become enemies, right? They become enemies, just like Dhruva was disinherited by his stepmother. And this goes on today. You know, my stepmother disinherited me. I know many devotees whose step-parents disinherited them and, you know, doesn't invite you, whatever. So this goes on. Even among the demigods, this kind of thing. This is not just some Kali Yuga thing. It goes on even among the demigods. It goes on even in Satya Yuga that they appear to be enemies, and, you know, they're against the demigods and they're with the demons. So here you are, you're part of Indra's army, and this enemy comes and takes over the kingdom. Now, the demigods, when Bali came, changed their forms and ran away, right? They were warned, you're not going to be able to fight them because they have the blessings of the brahmanas. So the demigods turned into birds or rabbits or whatever, and they left in disguise. But evidently the army didn't leave. See, even though they must also be demigods to live in Swarga, they didn't all leave. So just the chief demigods left. They didn't bother to fight, and they were stuck there. And, you know, when you take over Indra's planet, I guess you get Indra's army. I'm thinking about when Bharat came back from his uncle's house and he found out that his mother had banished Ram and said that he could be the king. Then he said, you know, I'll send all of Ayodhya to follow Ram. And she's like, no. She says, Ayodhya has to stay here. And the people wanted to go too, all the people. They said, if Ram's exiled, we'll go with him in the forest. Let Ayodhya become a ghost town. Let it become deserted. And Kaikeyi said, no, what's the use of a king without a kingdom? You know, what's the use of Bharat ruling an empty city if everybody goes? So for Bharat to be the king, she wanted him to have the citizens and the army and everything. So for Bali to take over the heavenly planets, he would also have the soldiers. But it probably wasn't very nice for them. Just imagine, you know, you're there to serve Indra, and instead you're stuck serving Bali. So they would have to be obedient, but they probably weren't very happy. And a lot of these stories are to show us that Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punarvartin Arjuna Mamupe Chetukanteya Punajanman Navichite. You can go to Brahma's planet, there's still going to be trouble. You know, I don't know who these soldiers of Indra are. Maybe they're Kshatriyas who die in the battle or something. You know, the warrior who dies in the battle goes to heaven. But if you still die in a warrior mentality, I don't know, maybe you become Indra's soldiers. But still there's problems. You can become Indra's soldier, and then you're taken over by the demons. And you have to listen to the demons. Right? When Hiranyakashipu took over the universe, it said everyone except Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva were under his control. All the demigods had to, the chief demigods had to listen to him. And it said that he would yell at them for no reason. You know, I'm sure we know people like that. So imagine having that person as your boss. Maybe you've had such a person as your boss who just, you know, chastises and punishes and yells at you for no reason at all. And this is the problem. It's the problem all over the material world. It's not just, you know, oh, it's Kali Yuga or this or that. you know, enemies within the family, take over. Like my youngest son for many years was in charge of a prasadam business. He didn't own the business. He had a part ownership. But he didn't own the business, but he was the manager. And then at one point, the devotee who owned the business decided he wanted to sell it. And he ended up selling it to non-devotees. And it was bought by a man who got it as a present for his son. The man was very, very wealthy, owned many, many companies. And he thought, I want to start my son off in business, so I'll buy a company for him as a gift. So this son didn't know anything about running a company. Completely ignorant. And there he was in charge of the decisions. And then they were non-devotees, and they didn't really like the idea that all the food was being offered. You know, first thing they did was they said, get these deities out, get these idols out of here. We don't want the food offered to idols. And they fired all the devotees except two, the cook and my son. And the cook was secretly still offering everything. And it was just like living hell that my son went through. And finally, it's like, we kept saying, quit, quit, quit. And he said, but if I quit, nothing will go on. Nothing will get offered anymore. Everything will fall apart. And finally, thankfully, they fired him. They fired both the remaining devotees. But, you know, here you are running this nice prasadam business, and the owner sells it to these non-devotees who then, you know, fire everyone and harass everyone. My daughter-in-law was saying, she said, practically my husband's being abused here at this company. It was really bad. So these things happen. You know, they happen. And in one sense, all of us are here under the instruction of Mayadevi, isn't it? Arjuna complains about this to Krishna. He says, why am I forced to do things that I don't want to do? Why? And of course, in Srimana Shiksha, Raghunath Das Goswami talks about this. He says that it's like we have thieves that have ropes around our neck, and they're pulling us around to this and that and the other thing. When I first read the Bhagavad Gita, that one question really struck me. Why do I do things I don't want to do? Do any of us have a day or a week where we never do anything that we don't want to do? I'm talking about against our ideals. I'm going to be this kind of person. I'm going to behave like this. And then we don't. Or I'm never going to do that again. And we do. Am I the only one who has this problem? Today I'm really going to chant attentively. And then it's like, oh yeah. You know, I'm going to wake up at this time, and we don't. Oh, slept through my alarm again. I'm going to be nice to the devotees. What do you mean there's no more? Oh no, I said I was going to be nice to the devotees. And this is because we have the wrong army general. You know, what was Krishna's answer to Arjuna? With the edition of Bhagavad Gita that I read in college, university, Arjuna's question was at the bottom right part of the page. Why do I do things against my will that I don't want to do? And I was like, yes, yes, what is the answer? And I turned the page and Krishna says, it is lust. Like, really? That's the answer? I was so disappointed. And these are the generals of Mayadevi. Mayadevi has her generals, Kam, Krodh, Matsarya. What's motivating us is our own lust, our own fear, our own anger. And we're willingly, I mean, these soldiers of Indra, I don't think it was willing. I think they were just taken over. It was basically like a coup, you know. But we willingly put ourselves, we're part of Krishna's army. We're Krishna's servants, and we've willingly put ourselves under the control of illusion, and we're willingly taking orders from lust, anger, envy, greed, who then tell us to do things that we don't really want to do. It's like we're divided, isn't it? I don't want to act like that. I don't want to be that kind of person. I don't want to have these thoughts. I don't want to say that. Why did I say that? I told myself I would never say anything like that. And here I am saying it again. Oh, no, now I've just gossiped about devotees. Why did I do that? It's like, ah. But the problem is that we want lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, and madness. On some level, we want these things. We think, you know, if I didn't have these things in my life, I would just sleep all day. You know, if I didn't have any envy, I wouldn't be motivated. If I didn't have any anger, I wouldn't stand up for righteousness. I was talking with one newly married couple. I advised them to get the book by Jaishila and Vimala. I'm plugging their book. The Five Drops Formula. So, fantastic book for grihasthas. I think it's a fantastic book for anybody who ever relates to any other human being. But they particularly wrote it for the grihastha ashram. So my friend bought the book, and then she said to me, you know, the first thing you're supposed to drop, five drops, it's five things you're supposed to drop. So the first thing you drop is drop the flame. Give up your anger. And she said, but my anger is justified. I don't want to drop it. You follow? I have a good reason to be angry. My husband did this, he said that, he didn't do this, he didn't say that. I have justified anger. Why should I drop it? You all understand? So we're attached to these army generals of Maya. We like them. We think that they're our friends. We think that they're our friends. It's like, you know, the elephant's tied up to a stake by just a little bit of grass. You know that? They train the elephant so after a while they can just put a little grass around its foot. It doesn't try to get away. And that's how we're tied up. Just as little, we could break it at any time. Bhakti Sinatra said, we're like a person hugging a tree, saying, help me, save me. Let me go. It's like, you're hugging the tree. So we're complaining. Why am I forced? Why am I impelled to do things against my own ideals? To do things against what I believe in. And it's like, because you're holding on to the force that's whipping you. These are compared to whips. You're volunteering. You're volunteering for the military. You know, it feels like we've been drafted, but we haven't been drafted. We're volunteers. And we're volunteers who could quit at any time. And Krishna says, Masuchaha, don't worry. Don't worry, just quit. Just surrender. You know, so this is, we feel like we're forced into servitude. We feel like we're forced to serve our body. Body says, do this, okay. The mind says, do this, okay. Our desires say, go for this. Okay. I don't know how long I can resist you. You're too strong. So I can imagine how happy the Indrasena felt when Vamandeva is there to rescue them. Just imagine how happy they felt. Because they were all witnessing this. Vamandeva comes, and they're like, whoa. You know, everyone's seeing Vamandeva. Who is this? Who is this? Is he a fire god? Who is he? And now there's no doubt. Now there's no doubt. He's expanding, right? And on the bottom of his feet are planetary systems. On the top of his feet are planetary systems. The different elements, the subtle elements, the gross elements are all within him. He's as big as the universe. So there's no doubt. Ah, oh, it's Vishnu, it's the Lord. And why did Vishnu come to save not only Indra, but the Indrasena? He didn't just come to reestablish Indra on the throne. He came to save all the devotees. Why did he come? Who asked him to come? Aditi, a devotee. So the Lord comes when the devotee asks the Lord to come. And then he rescues the devotees. Puritranaya sadhunam vinashaya tiduskritam dharmastam stapanatraya sambhavani yuge yuge. So whether one is involuntarily put under the control of a bad master, or whether one has voluntarily put oneself under the control of a bad master, the Lord wants to rescue his parts and parcels, his devotees. And even though we're voluntarily putting ourselves under Maya, and we're doing that actually at every moment, Prabhupada says that Krishna, 24 hours a day, imperceptibly, is asking us to make this choice. So even though we're making the choice to be in Maya's army, still, the devotee, like Srila Prabhupada, who's the Senapati, he has mercy upon us, and he says, hey, Mahaprabhu, go save him. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's Patita Pavana, he saves even people who have volunteered for Maya's army. He saves even people who are holding on. I don't want to let go of my anger. It's justified. And then complaining, I fight with my husband too much. Right? Why do I fight with him so much? But I don't want to let go of my anger. Even people like that. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is coming. And Mahaprabhu also displayed a universal form. You know that, right? He also displayed a universal form. And he displayed his 21 hours of ecstasy where he displayed himself as Vishnu. It says, come back, join my army. Join my army. So that's what Srila Prabhupada is calling us to do by the grace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You can have everything in the universe. The universe is under the control of the Lord. Why be the servant of these other things? Be joyful that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to rescue us by the grace of his devotee, Srila Prabhupada. And so many other acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who also desired the saving of everyone all over the world, that people from all nationalities would be singing Jai Sachi Nandana Gaur Hari. You know, you go now to Loy Bazaar and you hear every language in the world, isn't it? And no one stares at you anymore in Vrindavan for having white skin and blue eyes, you know. When I first went to India, I was thinking, oh, finally I'll go to a place where I won't be weird. You know, because you become a Hare Krishna devotee and you wear a sari and tilak and you know everybody's looking at you in the West. And I went there and again I was weird. Everybody was staring at me there, but not anymore, at least not in Vrindavan, and increasingly not so much in Mayapur, but especially in Vrindavan, nobody stares at you anymore. Oh yeah, there's foreigners. So this is by the blessings, especially Bhakti Vinod, Bhakti Siddhanta, Srila Prabhupada, Advaita Vacharya, who called Mahaprabhu to come. So we should go and join back with our original regiment, you know. We became AWOL. We became voluntary mercenaries in Maya's army. But what does Jesus say? The wages of sin is death. She doesn't pay very well, huh? Instead of working for our normal master, we should be mercenaries for Maya, but it doesn't pay well. Does it pay well? Serving lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, madness, fear. Is it good pay? What do you say? Pretty lousy pay. And we can quit it at any time and allow ourselves to be rescued. So we can just think of how joyful Indrasena is here in this verse today. How joyful they must be feeling. Yes! Yes! Vamandev has come. The form of the whole universe has come. He is more powerful than any other living entity. And again, we will be restored to our rightful position. So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections? Yes, Brian.
Being with us, as you mentioned, that the army was not happy, although they were staying in
we can guess they weren't
position,
happy.
Yeah. The idea is that they kind of swore the loyalty to the position, not to the person. Probably army in the United States also, they swore to the country.
That's right.
Not to the particular person.
Generally
although
it's like that.
If the person turns bad, they still have to serve it.
That's right. Yes.
So is it, can we draw some similarities in our life if we swore to someone good at first, but then turns out bad, so we didn't swear to the person.
Be careful who we swear loyalty to, isn't it? I think there's many examples in the scripture, you know, be careful what vows you take. There's many instances like that. You know, Bhishma was in this kind of a position where he had sworn an oath of loyalty to the position rather than to the person, and then he was stuck serving Dhritarashtra and Duryodhan. We have, you know, Dasarath, who made this vow to his wife, whatever you want. So we have many examples in the Shastra of people who were not thinking very clearly. When, I mean, it may be the Lord's Leela, whatever, but the point is that these are examples for us that we should be a little careful. You know, it's interesting you say that. When Hitler took over in Germany, he had the soldiers swear a vow of loyalty to him personally and not to the position. It was one of the markers. And they're saying that Donald Trump is doing that in America with a number of the people in power. You know, he'd meet with them and say, I want your loyalty to me. Not to the president, not to the government, but I want your loyalty to me personally.
Very personal approach.
Yes. So it's, you know, that's one of the signs, one of the danger signs. But yeah, most likely they had vows of loyalty to the position. So either one can put you in danger. One should be careful. You know, I always taught my children and my students, promises is for marriage and initiation. It's not, don't throw out promises easily. You know, be promising this and that and the other thing all the time. Yes?
You mentioned that even a person has got that interest and anger and wanted behavior, still a person can't save
him. He's doing it.
He's doing it. No, but I mean, I was thinking about this, you know, because sometimes my anger comes in this way, why should you save me if I'm so bad?
Well, generally he doesn't. Generally Krishna doesn't. Krishna is generally just neutral, and he usually doesn't. If somebody wants Maya, it's like, okay, you want Maya? Fine. So when does Krishna do that? He does it when his devotees ask. And he does it especially as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he does that. In that, because then he gets in the mood himself as a devotee. But as Krishna, generally he doesn't. He doesn't interfere. He says, if you're choosing Maya, fine. But even with the devotees, you know, there's still some desire in us to be free of Maya, otherwise we wouldn't be sitting here. It's generally, for many of us at least, it's a mixed thing. It's like, yeah, I want to surrender to Krishna, but can I keep my anger? Because it's justified. And I want to be able to get angry at my husband when he says the wrong thing. That's what she said to me. You know, it's like, well, then. So, you know, we're sort of divided. And therefore, Prabhupada talks about a gradual and proportional surrender. That as we become more and more attracted to Krishna, we become more and more courageous to let go of the things we're attached to in Maya. We start to experience that Krishna is a shelter and that I don't need Maya as a shelter. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, ahankara ashrita and kama ashrita. We take shelter of false ego. We take shelter of lust. We can certainly see that in other people. We can certainly see how other people take shelter of their false ego, yeah? And how they take shelter of their anger and they take shelter of their lust. But as we start taking shelter of Krishna, it's very nice. Nitai Pada Kamala. Koti Chandra Shushitam. Like millions and millions of moons. It's a nice shelter. It's an eternal shelter. We actually feel sheltered. And then we can look at these other shelters and go, you know, you're really not very nice. What is it? Taking shelter of envy? Duh. At a certain point we say, you know, like leaving an abusive relationship or something. I don't care if you paid the bills. I don't want you to beat me up anymore. Goodbye. As it in bhakti, our process is that we give up the shelter of Maya by gradually increasing and increasing and increasing, taking shelter of Krishna. It happens pretty much automatically. Yes, Prabhu.
You mentioned that desire to keep the anger because it's justified.
Yeah.
Just you mentioned that there's this possibility to give good or bad karma, but not acting on a level of mercy. But if you want to be relationship to be just and justified, so it's like just me, just you, but then they're skipping the possibility to increase positively and give some mercy.
That's a very nice understanding. So I'm going to say something which will probably offend all the males in the room. So I hope you will excuse me for this. But this is scientific. So many years ago, and I can't remember the names. I should know the names. As a social scientist myself, I should know the names, so I'm sorry. But there was this very, very famous study of how human beings develop a sense of morality and ethics. How does that come about, you know, from birth to adulthood? So the conclusion was, after doing a study, that we develop morality and ethics through a sense of justice. And many years later, another researcher looked at that study and said, this study was only done with men. And she did a study with women and found that women develop a sense of morality and ethics based on mercy, which very much ties into the fact that Srimati Radharani is the personification of Krishna's compassion, and that Krishna becomes particularly mercy when he adopts this mood of Srimati Radharani. So the tendency to just focus on justice, well, there's a need in the world for justice, then it's hard for us to get mercy. Not only is it hard for us to give mercy, but it's hard for us to get mercy. At one time at New Vrindavan, during the big festival of inspiration, it was like, I don't know, 500 devotees there. And somebody was saying, you know, but it doesn't seem that everything's just. And I said, why do you want everything to be just? If everything is just, where would any of us be? You know, we think we want justice for everybody else. But if justice was really applied to us, where would we be? How many living entities have we caused pain and anxiety to just in the last month? Especially if you count, you know, non-human entities, probably gazillions. And I don't know about any of you, but I cause humans anxiety too, even devotees, even if I don't mean to. And sometimes I actually mean to, sorry. Isn't it? Yeah? Again, am I the only one with this problem? So if it was just justice, you know, I'd be finished. One time I was in Auckland for Govardhan Puja, and I was telling the whole story of the lifting of Govardhan Hill, and I said how Indra thought that he had been offended, but actually he was the offender. Nobody offended him. What's the problem if the offering's made to his master instead of to him? How is that an offense to him? He was so convinced he was offended that he became the offender. And I said how I was working with a group of devotees many years ago, and I was completely convinced that they had offended me. And 10 years later, I realized that I had offended them. And I went and apologized to all of them. So afterwards, one young man said, why would Krishna let somebody stay in the Hare Krishna movement for 10 years if they were offensive? And I said, you're talking about me, right? And he's like, no, I wasn't talking about you. I said, yeah, you were. I said, should Krishna have kicked me out as soon as I offended all those devotees? I said, he gave me 10 years to figure out that I was the offender and to apologize. That's his mercy. I said, so often we look at other devotees who say, oh, look how offensive that devotee is. And maybe we're right, maybe they are offensive. But Krishna is going to give them some time. And if we don't want Krishna to give them some time, you know what, he won't give us some time either. We may not think we're offensive. For 10 years, I didn't think that I was the offender. I had a whole story. I had a whole story about how they had offended me. And I told several people the story. So yeah, if we just get fixed in this justice thing, then you don't have to deserve it. That's what causeless mercy means. We don't deserve it. Take it. It's a gift.
It doesn't mean that you can behave any way you want. You deserve mercy. It doesn't mean that you can behave any way you want.
Well, you could try that, but you won't be able to receive the mercy if you behave any way you want. If I give you a gift, you have to put out your hand and you have to hold it. If I give you an undeserved gift, that's what a gift means. If I give you a gift and you drop it or you throw it against the wall, you're not going to have it. So no, you can't behave any way you want. You can do whatever you want, but you won't be able to receive the gift. You won't be able to receive the mercy. There's some volition. There's volition there, you know, in the first... We pass by the Harinam party. What do? We get the chance to read a book. What do? We get the chance to take prasadam. What do? That's all causeless mercy. How do we respond? And that's not just... It wasn't just the first sandesh you got or the first kirtan you heard, but this is all the time it's happening. Prabhupada says 24 hours we're being given this chance. How are we responding? How are we responding? How are we responding? And Krishna is very patient. If we respond rightly, sometimes a little bit, he's encouraged. Like we would be with a young child. Anasuya was telling me, you know, my son doesn't listen to me very much. I said, most three-year-olds don't listen to their mothers very much. But, you know, she doesn't stop loving him. She says, well, he listens sometimes. I'm like, yeah. So even if we just listen sometimes, we just receive sometimes, Krishna is very excited. He gets excited when someone says, I'm going to the Cinerama. He gets excited when somebody says, oh, look at those Hare Krishnas, what are they doing on the street? He gets excited. Oh, they said my name. So don't you think he gets excited when we pick up our japa beads and chant and try to be attentive and try to chant with love? Even if an hour later we criticize a devotee, you know, then he's going, oh, why did you have to do that? Okay, let's try. All right. Is that okay?
I'm just thinking about what is the meaning of justice and what is this for?
What is justice for? Justice is to keep the balance among living entities who are not yet ready to strive for mercy. And to have a peaceful society where there's a foundation from which mercy can be received. If society is chaotic, it's very hard to give mercy. It's hard to practice bhakti if society is chaotic. If there's no justice, if there's no peace. If there's no justice, there's no peace. But it's a lower principle. Which varna is concerned with justice? Kshatriyas. Which varna is concerned with mercy? Brahmanas. My own theory is one of the things we really seem to lack in ISKCON is good justice. I don't care which side you're on or which case you're on, we really have a problem with justice. I mean, as far as Sesha is concerned, and I agree, we have some problems with morals and ethics and justice. That's all Kshatriya business. Because we have Brahmins running things and they go, oh, it's okay. Brahmanas are concerned with forgiveness and mercy. Does that make sense? We haven't really activated kshatriyas in our movement yet. We haven't quite figured out where they fit in and how we have kshatriyas for justice. You know, we've tried to set up a judicial committee and it, you know, that's not so good at that yet. But there's some place. If you're going to have a society, there has to be justice. But it's a foundation. It's not the ultimate. It's not the highest thing. The purpose of justice is so you have a peaceful, sane society in which people can give and receive mercy of bhakti. And it's really only for those who are still in the modes of nature, and it's not really for those who are transcendent. For those who are in transcendence, it doesn't apply at all. Sarva dharman pritcha jamami kam sharanam vraja antam sarva papa. It has no application. Karmadi nudahati kintu jabhakti bhaja. Isn't it? For those who are really transcendent, there's no... It's not there. Well, of course, if you offend Vaishnavas, that's not... Prabhupada says even a Paramahamsa can fall down if they offend Vaishnavas. But as far as ordinary karma, and justice... But if we're going to have a society and establish Varnashram, at some point we need to get that part of our society together. We're working on it. Yes? GBC men. We're working on it. It's in progress. Huh?
At a slow speed.
At a very slow speed. Very slow speed. With some major setbacks and embarrassments, but we're working on it. Yes, Prabhu.
Well, yeah, I thought of bringing a somewhat different view into the justice and mercy.
Mm.
It says, I've been thinking of it as being practically in constant strife and one with each other and how or ourselves both apply different situations.
Mm.
And what seems to me that sometimes it is, so to say, more merciful to be jealous or otherwise.
Yes.
You know, because too much mercy also.
There's a nice conversation between, of all people, Prahlad and Bali Maharaj on this very point, and I don't have it memorized. It's something that I read in my seminar in forgiveness. But this is again from the point of view of a kshatriya. So Bali asked Prahlad, are there certain, when should you forgive and when should you punish? But this is from the point of view of government. That it,
really
the
like
context
your,
is government.
The point that you made that a certain level of surrender of justice doesn't play a role.
Doesn't play a role at all.
I give my thumbs up.
Doesn't play a role. But under that, it does.
Yeah.
If you're under that, there has to be justice. But if I can remember, I think Prahlad was saying... like second offenders, even if the offense is slight, they should be punished. People who don't show any remorse should be punished. He says if you punish all the time, then people will see you as cruel and they won't want to obey you. And if you forgive all the time, then also people won't want to obey you. They'll think that you're soft. You know, you lose authority either way. But he gives a list of who should be forgiven, you know, and who should be punished. But again, that's from the point of view of a government. It's not, that particular context was a little different context. But even we see, like Prabhupada would say many times with Krishna, that, you know, three strikes and you're out kind of thing. He would say if you do something wrong and you say, Krishna, please excuse me, he'll excuse you three times and that's it. You know, after that there will be some punishment. And sometimes Krishna even punishes his devotees, sometimes to set an example, and sometimes because we're not on the platform of full surrender. You know, and we find even devotees who are completely above concepts of justice, like, you know, Rupa Goswami had his eyes closed and was meditating on some leela and started laughing, and someone who walked past took offense. And although Rupa Goswami had no intention of causing offense, and he's above any consideration of offense, still, he felt some disturbance, and he went and apologized to the person. So one reason that the fully surrendered souls are above ordinary justice is they voluntarily act properly. They don't need somebody over them with a stick. You know, they just voluntarily do the right, naturally, they do the right thing. And you know, Prabhupada defines mistake in the Ishopanishad 18 purport as unintentional sins. So the liberated souls are above mistakes. That doesn't mean they never put their left shoe on their right foot or misquote a verse or something like that. But they don't unintentionally sin, which basically everyone else does all the time. And if there's something that may even appear to be a discrepancy, immediately they rectify it. They immediately take a humble position. So therefore, there's no need of a justice system for such persons. And Bhaktivinoda says the only rules in the spiritual world are have love, have prema, and don't envy. Those are the only rules. They don't need the government in the spiritual world. They don't need a police force. They don't need jails. They don't need rule books. Like Prabhupada said, there'll be an ISKCON in the spiritual world. But without the ISKCON law book, you know, you won't have to look things up. And, you know, rule 6.1.2.7.8a. Right? We have this, right?
Yes, in Vrindavan, you know that there's a small Brahmin boys and there's a, mostly the Vaishyas and the Brahmins.
Well, there are Brahmins.
Not like Kshatriyas.
Well, there
are Rajas, kind of.
There are. And in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it's really funny how, you know, Uddhava is saying, well, Krishna has the mood of a Kshatriya, and Narada is saying, here? He says he likes to play like that. But there's no, you know, there's no laws. It's just play. It's not, you don't have to have some big government with some, you know, or legal headaches. And yeah, you know, in Dwarka and Mathura, it's not like the Ritviks took over the temple and what are you going to do and you have to go to court to fight about it. That's not going on. You know, those considerations aren't going on at all. It's all just, everyone's just acting out of love. But for people who aren't liberated, some government has to be there and some justice system has to be there. Otherwise everything is chaos. But if we're attached to that, if we become angry about it, I want justice, I want... Then we're back in mundane dharma. Then we're under the modes. And then it would be very difficult for us to get mercy. Jesus tells that example of a man who had debt and he went to the judge and the judge says, you're excused from your debt. Because in those days, you had to go to jail and you would work for the government and the government, instead of paying you, would use the money to pay off your debt and you stayed in jail until your debt was paid. Now, you know, it was debtor's prison. So the judge said, I excuse you from your debt. You don't have to pay. Then Jesus said the man went on the street and he saw someone who owed him money. And he says, hey, you owe me money, you have to pay. And one man went back to the judge and said, hey, you forgave him, but he's not forgiving others. The judge calls him back in, jail. So if we get emotionally, we may have a job, if it's our job to be in a kshatriya position, then we may have a job to say, hey, sorry, you have this consequence. But if we're emotionally attached to that and we emotionally delight in punishing people, then we get out of the realm ourselves of mercy. You know, and if you're really into it, I have one devotee friend who says, you know, if you're really into it, you can always become a Yamaduta. You know, if you're running around ISKCON, that person did this sinful thing. That person did this sinful thing. Punish them, punish them, punish them. Says there's a place in the universe for you. So we need to be careful that we don't lose the... I didn't talk about it the other day, but it was in the purport, how Bali Maharaj had brahminical qualities, even though he was acting in the role of a kshatriya. And this, for Vaishnavas, we have to be very careful that if we're acting as a shudra or a vaishya or as a kshatriya, even as an ordinary brahmana, that we don't get pulled by the modes of nature. Huh? So if you're doing shudra work, the mode of ignorance can trip you up. They're called ropes. You know, the gunas are like ropes. So there's a rope of tama and a rope of raja and a rope of sattva. And certain kinds of work tends to predispose us to being tripped by certain kinds of ropes. Even sattva is a rope. Please don't think there's... What does Krishna say? Every work has some kind of fault. Please don't think only the shudras have a problem. You know, even if you're a brahmana, there's a sattva rope. And we need to be careful that we do our duty for Krishna without becoming influenced by the modes that accompany it. So when we have to mete out justice, which we have to do in a society of not all liberated persons, we need to do it very carefully without getting tripped up by the rajagun rope, which then, you know, then we're sorry in the long run. Is that all right?
Justice means like fear. It's said in many places that son is...
is acting out of fear.
Because of fear, and this is doing of fear. So
yes.
The whole universe is in the order because of fear or because of justice.
Yes. So, you know, it's necessary, but it's unfortunately necessary. It's like it probably says in the first canto, Krishna regrets punishing the miscreant living entities. He doesn't have a Rajagun think, vengeance! It's not Krishna's mood. When Krishna and Arjuna went after Aswatthama, it said Arjuna had red-hot coppery eyes, but Krishna had lotus eyes. Prabhupada says that when Krishna punishes, it's out of love. There's no enmity. There's no vengeance. There's no exulting. Just like a normal parent, you know, if you have to punish your kid, it's with regret. You try everything else first and finally, all right, time out. Go in the corner. It's not what you want to do. You're not enjoying punishing your kid if you're normal. I need to end now. Otherwise, I'm going to be punished by the authorities here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.